This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 14th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 177. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. 1 year after the beginning of the biggest time out in sports history, the vaccine rollout foreshadows the pandemic will end and normal will return. Hear part two of my interview with sports economist Victor Matheson on what's next for the wide world of sports. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or do you remember where you were when the world around you started to shut down because of the pandemic this week last year? Or if you were a frontline worker, where were you when the pandemic meant longer hours at work so that you could help keep society going? Here's Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, and what he had to say on March 11th, 2020.
WHO has been assessing this outbreak around the clock, and we're deeply concerned both by the alarming levels of spread and severity and by the alarming levels of inaction. We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic. We have never been before seen a pandemic sparked by a coronavirus. This is the first pandemic caused by a coronavirus. And we have never before seen a pandemic that can be controlled at the same time.
If you were in British Columbia, you might remember when you heard some of these voices. On March 11th, the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic emergency. But BC officials were slow to react. 2 days later, Friday the 13th of March, this is Dr. Bonnie Henry.
We're not talking about shutting down society here. We are, it's still very safe today in BC, all across BC, to go out, to go shopping, to go to restaurants.
By March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Dr. Henry changed her tune. It was now a crisis in BC.
We have taken the extra step of declaring a public health emergency in the province of British Columbia.
Here is Premier John Horgan.
It'll be the worst St. Patrick's Day ever, I expect, in terms of the hospitality sector, which depends on this day.
Solicitor General Mike Farnworth.
I am declaring a provincial state of emergency to support our provincial health officer and Minister of Health in swift and powerful response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
A year later, more than 85,000 people in BC were infected, and nearly 1,400 people have died. Vaccines are on the way, but not fast enough. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, suspicions over Sinopharm executives getting COVID shots before clinical trials approved. Top management of the Chinese drug maker Sinopharm received COVID-19 vaccines last March, about 3 months after Wuhan City saw its first patient and before approval was granted for clinical trials. The revelation, coming from Sinopharm chair Yu Qingming, ironically raises suspicions of the timeline about knowledge of the initial outbreak in Wuhan and the coronavirus transmissibility. Hong Kong infectious disease doctor Wilson Lam said vaccine development would normally take 10 years, but theoretically it could be done within a month if the virus genome was already known. Serious side effects might appear in the early trials, he said. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan in travel bubble talks with 5 countries. The Tourism Bureau has been in talks with Japan, Singapore, South Korea, and Vietnam since late last year about setting up bilateral travel corridors with a shortened quarantine. Of these 4 countries, Singapore has had the most success containing the pandemic and is pursuing the proposal the most actively. The head of Taiwan's Travel Agent Association said negotiations are ongoing with other countries. And in the New Zealand Herald, Joseph Parker named as sports star who police linked to drug conspiracy. The former heavyweight boxing champion lost his court battle to keep his name secret. He has not been charged, but prosecutors believe he played a role in helping import methamphetamine. Parker has denied any wrongdoing. Three men were jailed for importing large amounts of methamphetamine disguised in Nike shoes and clothing declared as gifts. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland protesters set fires, damage federal courthouse. Officers respond with tear gas, impact munitions. Demonstrators and officers squared off in front of the courthouse at about 11:30 p.m. on March 11th. Authorities repeatedly said federal property, including the sidewalk surrounding the courthouse, was closed, and that those who were on federal property were trespassing. The protest stemmed from an earlier demonstration against expansion of the Enbridge Line 3 oil pipeline that goes from Alberta to Wisconsin. In the Seattle Times, it's daylight saving time again. How long do we have to keep switching the clock back and forth? In the last 4 years, 15 states, including Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, have passed laws or resolutions to adopt permanent daylight saving time as their standard. California voters also approved the idea, and British Columbia said it would follow the rest of the West Coast. Due to the pandemic, the Senate's so-called Sunshine Protection Act, introduced annually over the last 4 years by Florida's Marco Rubio and co-sponsored by Washington's Patty Murray, seemed perhaps a lesser priority. Advocates say permanent daylight time saves lives, reduces crime, and serves as a public health boon by getting people out, moving, and recreating after work. However, opponents, including experts in depression and sleep science, say that it's morning, not evening light, that sets our natural circadian rhythms. On Czech News, Duncan resident recalls escaping Japanese tsunami 10 years later. Tsunami escapee Marley Davidek was in Japan with a group of environmental activists when the earthquake struck and they quickly decided to go to higher ground. Because the roads were cut off, they had to leave their rental cars and walk for a day through what Davidek described as a war zone to reach a road out. Davidek said that a generous woman who had lost everything offered to drive them 45 minutes to their hotel, and she wouldn't accept any money. Quote, "She was just happy to help, and I'll always remember her generosity." End quote. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. When the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus pandemic emergency on March 11th, 2020, it was the biggest time out in sports history. Victor Matheson, professor of economics at the College of the Holy Cross, was my guest last week to look back to 2020. He's my guest this week to look at 2021 and beyond. What will the new normal look like for sports fans? I asked sports economist Victor Matheson about the stay-at-home and the move-to-the-suburbs trends and what that means after a building boom for downtown arenas and downtown stadiums.
The downtown populations of people who are working and living downtown has decreased, and people are more apt to stay in the suburbs and therefore not go downtown to the stadium or the arena. Do you think that there will be a noticeable shift there?
So I suspect it won't be a gigantic shift if it's only the difference between living in the urban core and living in the suburbs. Because, again, for a typical person who might only go to a couple, Canucks games a year, the drive into the arena is not that big a deal. I think where we could have a much bigger issue is that if remote work really becomes really remote. So it's not just that I don't drive into the office from my home as often, but I don't even live in the same metropolitan area. It's a whole lot different for Canucks attendants if people are living in Banff, or they're living in Whistler, or they're living in Helena, Montana, because they can commute to work from a completely different metropolitan area. At that point, those fans aren't coming in for regular Canucks games at that point. So again, I wouldn't worry too much from a pro hockey standpoint, for example, of people moving out into the suburbs. That's probably not the hugest problem. It is a problem for that sports bar next to the arena that relies on 365 day a year activity and people coming in after work. That certainly is harmful for them. But you know, for a special event that you go into a few times a year, like a concert, like a hockey game, probably not that big a deal. But as soon as, you know, teleworking means that you can work from hundreds of miles away from the home office, then that has, you know, that's going to start having some significant impact on, you know, these big arenas and things like that and their ability to attract
people. The media industry heavily invested in sports broadcast rights, and it felt the impacts of the spring 2020 economic shutdown, and the ripple effects continued into 2021. Here in Vancouver, TSN 1040 radio was replaced by an all-comedy format. Meanwhile, outdoor sports and recreation sales have boomed, from cycling to camping to hiking to skiing.
So we've seen two things here, the impact on the media industry, which has contracted in many ways, and the expansion of the outdoor sports and recreation industry, that may also be another aspect of substitution effect. People who aren't able to buy season tickets to the Canucks, for instance, and people who aren't able to travel to Hawaii or Mexico are putting their money into better bikes, better skis, vacation to a resort closer to home.
Well, and we've obviously seen this in New England as well. It has a similar outdoor opportunities just outside of Boston and the other areas around here. I will say personally that, you know, going skiing this winter was one of the few things that actually seemed kind of normal because, you know, you usually go out there wearing a mask on those cold New England days. So that was one of those things. And again, huge expansion in camping out here as well. There is some question about whether that persists or whether this is a one-time thing. But again, like lots of things, you get people hooked and you get people who have made that initial investment, either in your heart and soul, the investment you make into your local team, or the initial investment into $1,000 or $500 mountain bike or hundreds of dollars of camping equipment. Once you've made that investment, then you may keep on with it. So again, the fact that people have shifted away from sports and made an investment elsewhere may be the sort of thing that keeps people from coming back once they can actually return. And again, I think the obviously sports leagues are very concerned about that because again, they've spent a long time, in the case of the NHL, they have spent, 100 years now trying to make sure that they get people fully invested in their teams. And again, a whole year of people to basically go into detox, right, from their local team addiction is the sort of thing that you may not have people coming back in the same way. Outdoor sports had experienced a somewhat long-term decline over time in the number of people camping and hiking across the country as, you know, people spend more times on their screens. And of course, this has been a good chance to get people out into the wild again, because it's kind of a safe place that you can go and, you know, be outside your home. So again, you know, there's a lot of things that depend on that status quo. You know, why are you doing this? Well, because that's what I did last year. But if you've got a disruption, then all of a sudden, you may not be going back to those things that you did before that you always did because, of course, that's what we did. And I think that's, museums, theaters, music venues are all in this world. You know, churches, exactly the same sort of thing. Now that people haven't been going in on Sunday mornings, maybe they do something else that they haven't done before. So I think there's a lot of major organizations that are really wondering what the world looks like, even if we can go back to normal, if we do go back to the way things were before.
Disruption was already on the mind of the sports industry because of the aging audiences. The baby boomers who grew up watching, playing, and attending major league sports are aging. And the millennials, who have different tastes and priorities, are starting to take over.
What will this 2020-21 interlude do for those efforts? Will it only make it harder for the industry to reach the younger audiences?
Yeah, so again, I think you're spot on there that the world does change, and there's no reason to think that our sports interests today are going to be the same as our sports interests in 50 years or 50 years ago. You know, the thing I like to tell my students in class is that if the sports economics class that I teach now, was being taught in 1921 instead of 2021, the sports we would be talking about as the big three sports in the U.S. would be boxing, horse racing, and baseball. The NFL would have only started a year before. The NHL would be in six markets, the original six, but nothing else. And we're still 30 years away from basketball even having a professional league. Of course, nowadays, 100 years later, you know, boxing is almost nowhere to be seen. Yeah, there's still a Kentucky Derby that we celebrate a little bit, and we talk about the Triple Crown a bit, but no one really thinks about horse racing. And of course, it's the NFL and the NBA. Baseball's still there. But, you know, this is a totally changed sports landscape. So there's no reason to think that in another 100 years, the same three big three sports that we're doing today are going to be the same big three that we're going to be doing in 100 years, because 100 years ago, those sports weren't the same. I mean, again, basketball wasn't even being played at a professional level, and the NFL and the NHL were both in their infancy. So there's no reason to think that the landscape stays the same. I know, for example, in the textbook that I write for sports economics, we've been asking ourselves for a couple editions now, are we going to talk about esports and video gaming as an actual topic in sports economics? And up to this point, we've been saying, well, there's not really enough money, it's not a big enough thing yet to talk about as a competitive spectator sport. But wow, that's radically changing. Certainly the biggest esports competitions bring in as much money as, for example, as the Canucks do in a given year. So, you know, this is getting to be the point that we can't ignore this as something that's being changing. And again, there's only 24 hours a day, and so for all the effort and time people put in watching one thing, is time not being spent watching baseball, hockey, football, all the old legacy sports.
And the one thing that people across North America are watching right now, the big scoreboard, of course, is the vaccine rollout. Those numbers, they haven't been impressive here in Canada. Much more impressive in the United States, where there's a lot of pressure from up top with new President Joe Biden accelerating that effort, which will only mean faster reopening of the economy and faster reopening of the sports industry. Just before we end this, how are things in your area with regard to A, the virus, and B, the vaccine rollout?
That's hard to say. Unfortunately, we've gotten into a world where, 2,000 Americans dying every day of coronavirus is what we've seen, day after day after day. It's better than the 3,000 or 4,000 we were seeing a couple months ago. So the numbers are way down. I'd certainly rather be in the United States in early March than in late January. But even these highly successful reductions in deaths we've had, are still way more than the deaths we had in a year ago when we went into full lockdown mode. I think a lot of people are tired. The thing that I would say is that is certainly crazy is, if anything, knowing that there's enough vaccine for every American, for every Canadian, that's going to be available within weeks or months to regular people. That means that we should take even more precautions now, right? Not less, because we're not safe yet, but it's, we have safety on the horizon, and saying, hey, we should open now because we will be getting vaccines is like saying, we've just driven 1,000 miles across country and haven't died yet, and now we're going to start driving on the wrong side of the road in the last 20 miles before we get home. That's crazy. And the fact that states are opening up, states like Texas, states like Mississippi are opening up because there's hope of a vaccine and because numbers are going down is really, really crazy at the highest level. The fact that help is arriving just means that we should be doing all the more we can to make sure we stay safe until the help actually does arrive.
Well, thanks again to Victor Matheson, professor of economics at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts, one of the world's top experts in the economy of sports, looking back over the last 12 months at how this pandemic has affected the world of sports. Thanks again to Victor Matheson.
Well, my pleasure. Again, thanks for having me.
We're all in this together. Stormy weather, you can count on us, we're your neighbor, and we're all in this together.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to social workers across British Columbia. It is Social Work Week in BC until March 20th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 14th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on March 14th in 1942, medical history was made. Merck's patented penicillin and the first American patient to take it was named Ann Miller. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Until next week.